We'll call the meeting of the Agriculture, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs, Finance Committee to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Junkie.
Here.
Representative Welty.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Finstad.
Here.
Representative Doty. Representative Faust.
Here.
Representative Hamilton.
Here.
Representative Hansen. Representative Heidgerken. Representative Magnus.
Here.
Representative Olin.
Here.
Representative Otremba. Representative Peterson. Representative Poppy.
Here.
Representative Schimansky.
Okay, in your packets, members, you have minutes from the February 21st meeting. Representative Poppy moves approval of those minutes. Is there any questions or discussions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Minutes are adopted. Welcome to members of the audience and people in the room. This is the Ag Committee and Veterans Affairs Committee, and we're very very informal here and very friendly here. There is a coffee pot. If anyone hasn't had their coffee or wants a second cup, help yourself. That's for everyone in the room. Also remind you to turn off your cell phones. If they go off, it's $1 to the coffee fund. If you answer them, it's $5 to the coffee fund. So that rule is still in effect. Members, today we're going to hear from AURI on their budget and, well, their information on who they are and then their budget requests. From there, even though it's not on your agenda, we're going to move into Minnesota Grown for a while because we have some out-of-town people and we want to take care of them for Minnesota Grown. Then if we have time, we'll move back into the department overviews. So at this time, we'll call AURI up. And I think there's a couple folks. Yep. There's some handouts coming, members. You'll be getting them. And we'll let you proceed, introduce yourself, and proceed any way you see fit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Teresa Spaeth, and I'm the Executive Director of AURI. And I have with me Max Norris today also. He's the Director of Projects and Technology. I did want to add, in addition to packets that you have coming around, we do have treats and samples here for you on the side. We did bring food.
And that's members and audience, that's a very good thing to remember. We are the Agriculture Committee, so food is always appreciated in treats, and it really helps helps our deliberations on your funding requests, too. So please proceed.
Thank you. What we have over here...
I assume you'll be handing those treats out.
We will be.
Okay.
Dan?
Over here somewhere.
We'll let the pages find them and take care of them.
And we will tell you that those are direct from our meat laboratory in Marshall, Minnesota. We do have a USDA-certified meat laboratory that we do quite a bit of work with new product development on. And you will be getting a sample today of some of our new product development on that. So thank you for that. And hope to get those out. Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. As we shared with you in the committee not too long ago, the Agricultural Utilization Institute Research Institute was created by the Minnesota Legislature over 20 years ago. And that the organization was created to foster value-added innovation across greater Minnesota and the countryside, primarily to increase utilization of ag commodities. And we've been very proud of that. We were one of the very first organizations of our kind in the nation. And now, as a test to, we get calls almost weekly now from other states testifying to how great and important this work is. We are aware of at least 16 other states that have organizations very similar to AURI, but we are still the oldest and probably one of the most prevalent in the nation right now, especially with regard to our work in renewable energy. So we are very proud of that. What do we do? We provide scientific technical assistance across the countryside, right in greater Minnesota, where often assistance with really strong expertise is very hard to get a hold of. And we also do something that we call targeted network coordination. And what this is we have project development directors that are located in various parts across greater Minnesota. We have four positions that cover that. And they work hand-in-hand directly in the field. They go directly to these organizations, whether it be a meeting of producers that are interested in starting their own ethanol plant, or it be a meat processing facility in the countryside. We go directly to where they are at and help them get organized and seek assistance. One of the things that we are most proud of is the fact that we provide not just assistance within our own laboratories and pilot facilities, but when we can't do something, we can tap into the best that Minnesota offers, whether it's with the University of Minnesota, with one of the Minsky organizations, private consultants, engineers, we have a network of the best that Minnesota offers, and we can bring that right to the countryside. And again, we do this by providing hands-on coordination directly with those companies out in greater Minnesota.
And members, I would tell you there's a separate section for AURI in your budget book, too, that we will be getting to. So just to give them a heads up, they might want to be reading and glancing at that before you get to your actual budget stuff.
Okay.
Please proceed.
What does this mean to Minnesota? Value-added development in rural areas, new markets for agricultural commodities, and we'll share with you here in a few minutes some of those products that we have brought forward that have been very prevalent in the rural communities, rural wealth creation and retention. A little hard to say, but one of the most important factors in what AURI does. It's not just about creating a business and not just about creating a new product, but it's about creating wealth on the countryside where we need the most assistance in this state. And we're very proud of the efforts that we make in making sure that we don't just generate new projects, but that we generate wealth and equity and ownership right in the rural countryside. And again, economic activity in rural communities. Continual evaluation. We're asked often, how do you keep a track of everything and how do you make sure that you're doing the best and the latest trends? Annually, we do these three different functions. Stakeholder analysis. We meet with all of the commodity groups, and if you're familiar with our statute, they're very well defined what those commodity groups are in the state of Minnesota. We go through and we meet with each one of them individually with their executive director or members of their commodity councils and such. And we ask them what the trends are, and we conduct a very, very strong in-depth analysis of this. We come back and we develop what we call initiatives, statewide public domain initiatives from these that drive what we do as far as assistance on a broad scale. Another thing that we do, and we do have in the packets that I hope are coming around to you, I'll share with you from a moment, we conduct an independent third-party market assessment of AURI and what clients feel about us. In your packet, you should see that. It looks like this. It's the Southwest. Uh-oh. Look at that. Southwest Annual Attitude Survey, and I might just take a moment with you to share with that. If you look in there, this is an independent survey. We're proud of this because we don't pay these individuals to say these types of things, but it provides for you, if you look on page 2 and 3 especially, some information on what do we do and what does rural Minnesota find the most valuable. On page 3 there, you'll see ag-based product processing is one of the strongest support functions that we provide. On the bottom there, you'll see the different types of services that we provide to these organizations. And you'll see product development and technical feasibility are the strongest that we have. And then I'll give you a few minutes, too, on your own to look through the rest attitudes. How do clients feel about our services? Where do we provide the most benefit? And also, where do we need to improve? We do take this very seriously each year as we do a program evaluation and review. We take this information and evaluate that and try to design programs around what we need to do to best assist greater Minnesota. And this is probably one of our most important tools to assure that we are in sync with what Minnesota businesses need for us. Another initiative that we undertake each year, you know, we are in rural Minnesota, but we have 3 locations and we're quite diverse and spread apart. Each year we conduct what we call organizational learning assessment, where we come together on an organization-wide basis and we review the 150 or so projects that we worked on during the year and have a very frank discussion about lessons learned and what we could do better, how, you know, what we know that we did very well, and how do we foster continued growth in that area. So we're very proud of doing that on an organizational learning basis. From that information, from those 3 primary functions, we decide what the priority functions are for the organization. And for 2008, we have identified the following priority areas. Renewable energy from agricultural products. As we all know, renewable energy is near and dear to all of our hearts, and it is one of the key and most important trends that we see coming for the following year. Commodity utilization in non-renewable energy functions. We cannot forget that, you know, renewable energy is very important, but there are many other products moving forward, as you will see in samples, and we need to foster those as well. So those are still a priority to us. Co-product utilization is a high, high priority. We do have a co-product utilization lab in Waseca, and this is important. Whether it be ethanol or biodiesel, those side products, DDGs and glycerin, are very important utilization, and they can help cash flow some of these biorefineries. So we're very, very focused on providing co-product utilization. And then, of course, value-added animal processing. Livestock is very critical to greater Minnesota. We cannot forget how important livestock and those issues are. We do take pride in these laboratories. You'll see with the samples I think have been handed out to you. We hope you enjoy those. But we do still do quite a bit of work in fostering livestock and nutrient development, not only in our facility in Marshall, but we have a new product development kitchen in Crookston, Minnesota. We do quite a bit of work on nutrition labeling, contents, and recipe formulation to try to foster some of those food areas, too. With that, Max Norris is here with me today to talk about some of the project specifics. Information on projects that we hope that you will find have been very successful in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Max Norris. And
excuse me a minute. Just so you know, there's a lot of meat here. We're going to have them clip open a few of them to pass around so you can help yourselves. We won't open them all if you're interested in taking one back to your office, but we're going to offer them to the audience here, too, because I want to make sure that people know it's worthwhile to come to the Ag Finance Committee. So, and there are some extra soy softs there, too, lotions for audience members. If you're interested, please help yourself to them also. So as soon as we find a scissors, apparently there wasn't a scissors here, we'll clip some of these open, take two or three to munch on now, and Representative Finstead, if you want to take some back to your office for distribution, and I'll take some back to mine, we'll make sure they get out. But we'll offer them to everyone. So tell us again now where that meat come from.
It came from the Marshall facility, our meats laboratory there. That's an all beef meat stick that you're getting ready to take advantage of, and no blended meats. It's all beef.
All beef. So all right. And enjoy. The soy sauce was developed when and where?
It was developed by a company about 8 years ago, to be very candid with you. And one of the reasons that we kind of continue to like to highlight soy soft, this company came out of Grove City, Minnesota, essentially manufacturing their own oil and subsequently moving it to packaging. I'll get a little more detail on that in my presentation. But the nice thing about soy soft, this is not a fly-by-night product. This is a product that's been around for over 8 years. And it has national market prominence. And it's from Minnesota, and that's good news.
All right. Continue. Did you introduce yourself for us?
I shall do it again,
all right,
sir. Mr. Chair, my name is Max Norris. I'm project director for AURI and also research and development. When we come to this part of most of the presentations, we actually... Some of us really get excited about it because this is kind of where the rubber meets the road. For instance, when you look at the pet care systems that is on the slide up there, we all recognize that there's many, many millions of tons of wheat that are manufactured every year and further processed into valuable food items, both domestically and internationally. What we fail to consider sometimes is that any manufacturing process, we see byproducts that come off of that. So what do we do with it? And the folks up at Pet Care System in Detroit Lakes brought a product forward, a concept several years ago. That product looks a lot like this. It's crumbles, and it's a pet care system type of deal that you put in for your small animals and cats. And obviously, when dampness begins to hit it, it clumps up and it can be readily removed. When you look at materials that are on as side streams, many times there's little revenue that comes from those. Many times you have to pay somebody to come and get it and do something with it. I can assure you they're being paid for this. When it goes out into the marketplace, both within our state and in a variety of major chains that carry it throughout the United States. As you can see here, it's non-grade wheat, so we don't have to deal with any issue out there that says that we're taking food items and doing things with, and they move over 600 semi-loads per year. We think they've done an excellent job, and one of the things that, again, there's a lot of longevity with this company. They continue to make product, they continue to improve product, and they continue to sell product. The USA Solutions. Now, I know you're looking at something behind me that's green. this is the product. It's had some changes in it, and the material now indeed is green. It's composed primarily of stover and some minor amounts of wood product, and one can then utilize a material of this nature in nurseries for swine and in farrowing houses.
What are the arrangement? Would you pass those things around too? Start them around on the tables once the litter too. We'll just take a look at them. And we need more of them beef sticks passed around.
It's always a problem of handing food out sometimes. The interesting part about this compostomat, of course, is that it is biodegradable. We see that the material lasts 2 to 4 weeks, then can be replaced. It's very economical. And one of the things as far as the swine producers are concerned, what they see is that they see considerably fewer mortalities of the nursery pigs as they go into the early grow-out time. As you can see, these folks are moving about 18,500 mats per year. It's marketed nationwide, and they are now considering to enter the pet market with an opportunity for products of this type. Excuse me. Soy salt. This is the material that you have a sample of. I don't know how many of you folks know this, but soybeans, I know at least one of your committee members does. There's over 2,500 uses of soybeans in some shape, form, or fashion that have been discovered around the world. That goes from food, it goes to chemicals, and personal care products. And what you have that were presented to you there is a personal care product. It's a skin emollient. It will soften the skin. How did they find this? They happened to be in the plant looking at some of these very grizzled workers out there who, you know, ought to have very hard and crusty hands, but they had hands like a child. And, of course, if you had your hand in oil all day long, your hands would be quite soft, too. And they felt like that this would be an opportunity to be able to take forward and to excuse me, to deal with the product as a value added. They entered the marketplace with a small composition of soybean oil in the system, and then another system that they called a heavy-duty system. The one that seems to have done the best is the lower percent of soybean oil. It doesn't take much to do the softening. I apologize for the voice and the cough, but I've had the flu. Biodiesel development. You know, in biodiesel, we kind of look at issues of this nature and we say that, for crying out loud, this is new. Well, ladies and gentlemen, biodiesel is not new. It's been around for many, many years. The chemical manufacturing process has been practiced since the 30s. Henry Ford was one of the first people to say, you know, my goodness gracious, why don't we come out and produce a product that we can burn like diesel fuel? The biggest problem that Mr. Ford had back in those days was related to something in 3 to 4 cent per gallon for diesel fuel. So there was no driving force because there was no automobiles to speak of either. That was just a growing scenario at that point. But AURI began back in the early 90s in working with biodiesel. And we've had the opportunity over the last several years to see it come to a fruition. We've worked with all four of the Minnesota biodiesel plants in either helping them get started or in helping them put a laboratory together or helping them to do technical service when issues arise. We've impacted over several thousands of farmers who are investor owners. We'll talk about that a little bit later. All of the plants in the state, the large three are, one is not, is B, what is referred to as BQ 9000. And this is a certified plant that is certified by the National Biodiesel Board. And it says that quality is number one. I'll talk about that because I can't say enough about quality. These plants have created jobs. They've created economic activity. And there's new markets for soybean oil. In fact, sometimes we worry about the new markets that have evolved for soybean oil. In that, will we be in a fight out there at some time, food versus fiber versus fuel?
Mr. Norris, let the folks know where the four plants are and tell us which ones are not BQ9000.
Okay. There is one in north eastern Minnesota called Green Ridge. Green Range, which is not.
Do you know what town that's in, Mr. Norris?
Excuse me. Dan Ironton. Now, I do know where the other three are. We have one in Brewster, Minnesota, which is a 30 million gallon facility. That is a BQ9000. We have a 5 to 7,500 gallon plant in Redwood Falls that is BQ9000. That's called Fumpa Biofuels. And then we have Soymore in southeastern Minnesota in...
it's near Albert Lea.
Near Albert Lea, yes. And that is another 30 million gallon facility. So you can see, you can add those three up and we get somewhere in the neighborhood of 63 to 65 million gallons. The one that is not BQ9000 is a small plant that is just getting moving. Biodiesel ATVs. When you look at where we typically see fuels go, one of the last things in the world we probably don't think about are small engines. But the bottom line in small engines, those are probably, when it comes to particulates and various types of gases formed, they're probably the dirtiest engines that are out there, particularly two-cycle engines. If you look at some of the things that have occurred with the ATV, we are able to carry a study out, utilize the biodiesel B20 in one of Arctic Cat's ATV models, and found very quickly that the material was certainly as dependable and was as good as diesel fuel was. We also found out a couple of places that in some conditions it was better. It was better, and please don't laugh at me, it was better in cold weather activities when it was utilized against number two diesel. And it was better in the mileage that the unit was able to get. The other thing that the ATV out of Arctic Cat that was able to bring forward for us was the beginning of what is probably going to be considered a new platform. When it's all said and done, we just recently heard that Toro, who has been working on this for a number of years, has made commitments to the utilization of biodiesel in their products, lawnmowers, things of that nature. So we go from automobile engines, or diesel engines, up to, or down to maybe two-cycle engines, four-cycle engines, and things of that nature, and show that we have performance and utility along there. AURI initiatives. You know, when you begin to look into emerging opportunities, you find things that need attention. And that's what these initiatives basically are. your slide indicates that these emerging opportunities with no identified partners. We do not have a commercial partner at the time that an opportunity may evolve. But we will have, certainly, are numerous public partners that range from the commodity groups, both state and national, to federal agencies. As I'm sure everybody here is aware, we have come off of a federal grant with USDA which allowed us to do a number of these things, and we'll chat about that a little bit later, too. Your listing here indicates that we have over 30 active initiatives of DDGS utilization. Each of these will have their own independent slides, so I won't read all of these to you, but I'll try to put some words around each of the items as we see the next slide. In the swine diets. Oh, that's in the wrong place then. Okay. The next slide that you are looking at has to do with Minnesota's Renewable Energy 2007 Action Now initiatives. Again, as many of you may be aware, back in the fall of 2006, some 41-plus organizations met in St. Cloud to discuss renewable energy and to determine what these individual groups collectively may be able to bring to the party. As you're probably well aware, you can hardly pick up any newspaper out there that you don't see that we have an opportunity for another renewable energy conference. There's probably five going on today in the state of Minnesota. So the idea here was, how do we ensure that Minnesota is a recognized leader in bioenergy, knowledge, application, and utilization worldwide, not just statewide, not just nationwide, but ultimately worldwide. And essentially what rolled out of that meeting and another meeting had to do with some items that you see in the overhead there: talent development, breakthrough research, infrastructure, public policy and awareness, economics and funding. And the overarching thing to all of these items that are here is the economics and funding aspect. In the process also evolved an opportunity to put together design teams. These design teams were some several. The breakthrough research, not unlikely that it would be the University of Minnesota that would lead that. convene Action Now Technology, trying to get things done, keep things rolling and things of that nature. Through the meetings that we're having, through the development of the next steps and things of that nature that will lead to ultimately additional information in the past, is a role for AURI. Public policy, Department of Commerce, transportation and distribution, the Minsky system is a very valued partner there leading that effort, and the economic assets of the state in this area. And the direction will be led by the Department of Agriculture. So at this time, this project, a big project with a lot of folks, is moving forward and bringing the items that you see here. Ms. Faith will be having a handout, not today, but in the near future, that will have information with the final detail in it for this group and other groups.
Mr. Chairman, with that, if I can make just a few comments.
Ms. Faith. Yes, go ahead.
What you're seeing here is literally hot off the presses. That's a little bit why we're a little bit out of order on this as far as the presentation is concerned. This is probably one of the largest initiatives that AURI has been spearheading in the state in the last 6 months. It is what we call the bioenergy roundtable discussions, or the discussions that Mr. Norris referred to. This is the Action Now initiative that has come through that. What we have decided, and our core design team is partnerships with the University of Minnesota, Dr. Robert Eldy, as well as the Minsky system, including Dr. Gail O'Kane, Dr. John Quisgard with Bemidji State University, and a few other facilitators that we've hired, actually, to help us with this. It's a very strong effort to bring all the parties in the state of Minnesota together that provide technical assistance, education, and research and development in renewable energy together in a concerted fashion to put a statewide initiative forward. What you're seeing here is the initial diagram of the five teams. in the meeting that we held in December on with this organization or this committee of 41 organizations, is we talked about what are the hopes and aspirations of every single one of the folks here at the table. And what we came out of that with were over 1,000 ideas. And we assimilated those ideas into 612. And then from there, we came up with these 5 core themes or functions that run through all of those ideas. Those being, as Mr. Norris shared with you, research, breakthrough research, infrastructure, economics and financing, public policy and awareness, and talent development. That has changed. Workforce development is no longer an issue. It is talent development in Greater Minnesota as well as in the cities. And what we are talking about here is you see the different identified core areas in there. As Mr. Norris said, you will see more about this in the probably by the end of the week, if not the first of next week, because this is a statewide effort, and it is very much in partnership with the organizations, especially that I just mentioned. We wanted to give you this first glimpse. As I said, this is literally hot off the presses as far as what we see the issues are facing Minnesota in renewable energy as we advance this knowledge and consumption and utilization for it as a state. You can see the key forces are funding, basic and applied research. Is that, you know, not only can't just go out there and dream up a new idea, it has to get out to the communities and has to be incorporated into businesses and projects. And then policy development. What are the best policies and the best practices? Minnesota is an uncontested leader in policy development in this area. And how do we get that message out, help other states foster renewable energy development, but make sure that we're still on the leading edge there? And so, like I said, this is very, very developmental. And please look for more of that in the coming week, several days, no longer than a week from now, I'm sure. You will also see you will be receiving invitations March the 20th, which I know is not such a great day, but we were trying to find a day that would meet a lot of objectives. We will be holding the next bioenergy roundtable discussion. That will be held at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and it is from 11 until 3:30, although we are going to be having lunch around 11:30, 12, and we are inviting members of both the House and Senate Ag Committees to that luncheon. But you are more than welcome to participate in the discussions as we move forward on that day. We're just very aware that you're very busy individuals and have a lot going on over here as well. We did what we could. We've been holding these in St. Cloud, but knowing that you were here and not a lot of folks can get away, we did move that location to the Department of Agriculture.
And we appreciate that. And members, I think we will have more discussion on this and focus. I mean, I think what we've been looking for as far as we need some coordination in this. As we know, everyone in the state has an idea on renewable energy and how you gather all these ideas and people together and move them forward in an orderly fashion. And you will have, I believe, a budget request coming for this Action Now roundtable and future activities, will you not, in the next week or two?
Yes, we will.
So, members, we will look for that and discuss that, and certainly I think this is one very important tool probably in our renewable energy toolbox as we move forward in the state. So I just want to point that out, too, that it just makes us dizzy sometimes on this renewable energy stuff, and we're thankful that there's at least a group thinking about how do we round everyone up into one corral, if you will, and make sure that we all have similar goals and objectives moving into the future. So we appreciate that, and we look forward to more information on this.
We will get it to you as soon as we can.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you. Mr. Chair, I've noticed my watch where our time is getting away from us. I will try to move rather quickly through some of the others. If I go too quickly, I suspect you will stop me and be happy to answer any questions you might have. Let's talk a little bit about the biodiesel initiative, if you will pick that up there.
Could you go back a slide to the DDGs? I have a question.
Oh.
How do you work with or utilize the University of Minnesota? Now, I was at the Animal Ag Conference in Wilmer on Friday, and we had a report from a University of Minnesota researcher who's working on DDGs and digestion and quality and other testing factors as it relates to swine and poultry and other things, too. The same things you're kind of throwing up here. Are you working with them at their experimentation? I believe that was in Waseca, or are you?
Yes.
So this is a partnership. Tell us how that works.
Absolutely. The DDG work basically has multiple partners in it. Dr. Gerald Pearson is certainly well known at the university in swine rations and swine health. He's working very closely with us in some of the feeding studies. Some of the feeding studies certainly are out in the Waseca area that has gone on, and other feeding studies have occurred in the Morris area. And what we're looking at there obviously comes with our third party being the Minnesota pork producers, because hogs plus DDGs plus the university plus AURI, and I guess I would say that we come in on with our laboratory and looking at various cuts of the meat that may be coming out, and for flavor and organoleptic characteristics of meats that have been fed varying levels, if you will, of the DDGs as far as the hogs are concerned. So this indeed is a several factor type of project that we're working on. University of Minnesota is very important with us on this, and they're carrying out a segment of that work.
Okay.
Biodiesel. When you look at real estate, what's the first two words that you think about? Location, location, location. Well, if you're going to work in biodiesel, there better be a word you think about, too. It's called quality, quality, quality. You're the new kid on the block. And always, any issue that arises when you're new in any marketplace, it's your fault. And therefore, we in this state happened to be first when we brought forward the Minnesota mandate for 2% biodiesel. We were the first to put product in the marketplace, and we were the first to have a winter. And we have been involved with our producing plants, and they in turn involved with the Minnesota Council for Biodiesel in trying basically to sell the full issues of quality of product that goes into the marketplace. You don't get second and third chances on products. You've got to put a quality product out there to begin with. We are putting a quality product out. And that quality product today is done as per the BQ9000 that we chatted about a moment ago. This helps assure that we check our products along the way and that we are doing those quality issues that are necessary. We have no reason in this state or in the nation to apologize for the quality that we have. Our quality is high and paramount. Biomass gasification. We put out a brochure several years ago which had a series of feedstocks and their characteristics as feedstocks for combustion, gasification, and so forth. We didn't realize maybe at that time, this is probably 3 or 4 years ago, just where we would be today when we begin to look at other means of energy that perhaps will offset petroleum-based fuels, will offset natural gas, and so forth. We can do that with some of the products that we have in our own state, and we can do it through the gasification type of materials. We have a lot of materials in the state that certainly can be used as a part of that scenario. We have worked with a group up in northwestern Minnesota, for instance. It's a seed processor, and they have side streams. And they found that by the utilization of the side streams that come off, not the seeds, but the other materials, and they take that material and take it through a gasification unit, they can offset a very high percentage of their natural gas costs. So that's just by example one of the things that's going on out there. Center for Producer on Energy, as you're well aware, we were fortunate enough to receive that $1 million award from the Rural Development of the United States Department of Agriculture several years ago. And we found very, very quickly that we were put very much in a position, maybe of envy to some extent, We knew what was coming down the pike with gasification, with biodiesel, with ethanol, and many of these materials that have the opportunity to offset our demand for petroleum-based products. We provided assistance to farmer-owned renewable energy with over 20 projects that impacted 9,000 Minnesota producers, and many of those were investors. Projects involved, as you can see there, those materials that are listed, biodiesel, biomass, gasification, methane, and others. We very much are sensitive to the value of producer ownership. Producer earned 10 times more bushels from locally owned plants. They have greater impact on local communities from producer owned. And as you probably can guess, small companies, if they have financial backing, can move faster than a large company. One of the reasons I truly believe that we received one of the Ag Innovation Center grants was because we directed it toward producer-owned energy. And that, I think, was one of the reasons that we added. Everybody is interested in impacts. What did the $1 million do for us? Over 20,000 producers impacted by 168 AURI projects in FY06. This includes projects from AIC and projects from AURI. Planned and actual investments that we were able to take a look at was over $211 million in the rural countryside for the most part. We leveraged more than $2 million in outside funds. And what comes along with all of this was something that Ms. Faith said a moment ago, rural wealth creation and retention. And the staff of AURI spent over 20,000 hours of technical service provided to projects across the rural part of our state. Where have we been? Where are we currently? And where do we need to be? Back in where we came from, in 2003, we received a very large cut, near 60% in reduction, that brought us to $1.6 million. This resulted in staff layoff, an office closure or two, and reduction in services that we offered. The year that we are in today, we're operating with a budget of $3.9 million. Some of that thanks to the USDA and other items. We are requesting from this group for consideration of $4.2 million per year, which will return us to where we were in the 2003 area. And with that comment, I would turn it back over to Ms. Faye to finish the discussion.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we're a pretty simple organization. What you see here before you is our budget for FY08. It's simply a manifestation. Our current operating budget is $3.9 million. As Mr. Norris mentioned, that is by blessing of the USDA Rural Development Grant that we received. We still do not know whether or not we had requested earmark funding to help continue that. And, of course, earmarks are not really going to happen, we don't believe, at the federal level this year. We have also requested reauthorization of that grant in the Farm Bill, and we are quite hopeful that that will happen, but it will not happen, even if it does make it into the Farm Bill, for almost another year. What you see here is basically the $3.9 million budget that we're operating under right now. Oh, I should also mention that we did an Xcel Energy grant, a one-time grant that we were fortunate enough to receive that also helped supplement these fundings. What you see here is basically our $3.9 million budget with a few factors of inflation. This does not really reflect the explosion of renewable energy that you see, but these are the figures that we are using. We do see a slight increase in areas for inflation, as well as a few positions that we need in order to maintain where we are at right now and take advantage of the opportunities that we see coming on the horizon, especially at the federal level. Basically, initiative and new trend expenditures, $975,000. What we will mention here is all of these dollars that are expended are matched one-on-one, either in cash or with equity, depending on the type of with labor or in-kind contributions, depending on the type of project that's put together. Team project expenditures, these are the direct one-on-one client private information type assistance that we give to companies in the rural communities, and that's $585,000. And then basically staff and benefits, $1.6 million. Facilities and insurance, $325,000. And those are for the three locations that we currently have. There has been no expansion added in that number. Laboratory and equipment, that includes repairs, maintenance that we have to have on some of our more expensive equipment. We do have to carry contracts and that type of thing for maintenance on a yearly basis. Travel, our communications newspaper and conferences, $75,000. You should all see in your packet our Ag Innovation newsletter, our newspaper. That is part of these expenditures of where the conferences that we are holding across the state to make sure that folks are aware of the newest trends and developments in value-added agriculture. Travel, we are in constant contact with folks. Every single day, 7 days a week, we are in contact with folks, and travel is a very, very big part of that budget. I was talking to an individual that purchased a new vehicle, a E85 vehicle, in November. He's already put 10,000 miles on that vehicle, so we are on the road all the time. Operations, contracted services, and professional development. We do have to make sure that our staff are up to date and up to speed on everything. Not a huge expenditure, but those added together $180,000. This is, like I said, $4.2 million is the request that we've made of the state. As you know, and as I think Chairman referred to earlier, the governor's recommendation was for $2 million a year, and that is not sufficient to cover our operations at this point. And so we have requested restoration to those fundings at the prior to 2003 cut, and we've asked for restoration of that.
And would you amplify a little bit on, you said these monies would be matched. Can you talk about how and where and why and who does it?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. The top two categories of the initiative and trend expenditures, those are our public domain type initiatives, and those primarily are partnered with on commodity groups. Where we will provide one-on-one cash match with commodity groups, farm organizations, sometimes economic developers, when we see a large issue. And right now, this is where we're seeing a lot of activity in renewable energy. And when you're talking about the partnerships, Mr. Chairman, with the University of Minnesota, as far as DDGs, those types of efforts would come out of this funding. And we do require that there is a one-to-one match. In some cases, that's in kind. If a researcher from another organization provides services and they are not reimbursed for those are considered matched. In turn, if we provide services from our individuals in our organization, that's considered matched to maybe a commodity group money or something like that. Team project expenditures, when we do cost share in cases where we cannot provide the services internal to AURI, but we need to provide confidential information to those organizations, we do not do that on a one-to-one. We don't pay for those services. We do either a one-to-one or less cash match with them. So we require them to have at least as much money put forward in those initiatives as we do.
So it's the top two categories that you expect to get matching funds from, $1.560 million, and then that will be matched with another $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Anything else?
Any other questions?
Okay. Members, any questions for AURI on any of the projects, any of the budgets? You've got the budget section in here, and certainly we'll be taking a look at that before April 2nd. It'll be part of our bill we roll out as a committee here around the next 3 or 4 weeks or so. So with that, we appreciate you coming in. I think it gives us a better overview on where you're at, what you're doing. And frankly, from the committee's standpoint, and particularly the chair, we do appreciate these efforts. We think, value-added agriculture is certainly something we've all talked about since day one down here when we were elected, and you are the organization that helps facilitate a lot of that. So we appreciate that, and we look forward to seeing you, more of you, and getting more information from you as we move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your support.
Thank you. The members will get the Minnesota Grown folks to follow in their chairs here now. And I believe, members, you have some handout material, a book, and some paperwork that came to you. You should all have that. And do we know where we're at in the budget book for you?
I do not know the page.
You don't know the page. All right. We'll let staff or someone can figure out where we're at.
My sheet matches. It's page 40.
Page 40? That is correct. There's a change item for Minnesota Grown members, which is part of the Ag Marketing Services on page 40. Please introduce yourself. Proceed any way you wish.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Huguenin, and I'm the coordinator of the Minnesota Grown Program at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
And Mr. Huguenin, could you spell your name for the record here?
I can. It's H-U-G-U-N-I-N.
Okay. Please proceed.
Well, I'd like to share some details of the change item request that's before you that builds on the success of the Minnesota Grown Program. In your packets, I believe you do have a copy of our most recent Minnesota Grown Directory, which is this thick publication, and inside it is a little bit of details about where we've been and where we're headed with our proposal. The Minnesota Grown Program works with producers of specialty crops and livestock, people like fruit and vegetable growers, nurseries, garden centers, livestock producers who are branding their own meats, honey producers, and farmers markets, to name a few. There are two pieces to this proposal. First is an increase in the state appropriation from its current level of $71,000 per year. The change item proposes an additional $65,000 for a total of $136,000. The second piece is an increase in the license fee paid by participants from $5 to $20 per year. Neither the appropriation nor the license fee has ever increased during the 20-year history of the program. These changes are proposed at the same time because the program has always been financed with a blend of public and private funding. In fact, state statute requires us to raise private funds. The proposal is the result of careful consultation with private industry, specifically the Minnesota Grown Advisory Committee. The Advisory Committee just completed a 3-year strategic plan that recommends these details. Our program is firmly rooted in the concept of a public-private partnership. We use the state appropriation as seed money to create activities worthy of private investment and participation. While the state statute requires us to raise a ratio of at least $1 of private funds for every $4 of public funding, we raise more from private sources than we receive from the state's current appropriation. Participation has increased steadily and continues to grow. More than 915 farmers are currently licensed to use the logo. That's more than double the amount from 10 years ago. 640 producers pay to be listed in the Minnesota Grown Directory that you have in front of you, and that's nearly double the number from 10 years ago. Perhaps more importantly, though, consumer demand for local products is increasing. As an example, nearly all of the 170,000 copies of the directory in 2006 were distributed in just 5 months. And the number of consumers searching our directory online continues to increase every year as well. We've had a very strong positive reaction to our brand new spokesperson, Olympian Carrie Tollison. In this picture, she's being interviewed by Chef Andrew Zimmern at the Minneapolis Farmers Market. And Chef Andrew is with the Fox 9 Morning News, and you'll note that he's got a copy of the directory, and his interview with her was focused on why it's important for her to eat healthy and to eat fresh local foods. We've featured her in the directory, on our website, and in two new television ads. She'll be working with us for at least the next 2 years, which puts us well beyond the 2008 Olympics. I mentioned that we had Carrie in two new television ads, the first of which promoted farmers markets. And the person, just for those of you who are outstate, the person in the ad with her is Jeff Grayson, who used to be the sports anchor at Fox 9. So our goal with this was to do something fun, something a little bit offbeat, and take advantage of the personality that Jeff and Carrie have.
Let's see what makes Minnesota-grown Olympian Carrie Tolleson so great.
Okay, Jeff, but try to keep up.
I thought we were training. What are we doing here?
World-class athletes need fresh fruits and vegetables. That's why I love to visit my friends here at the farmer's market. Nothing beats Minnesota-grown.
That is world-class.
Visit MinnesotaGrown.com and choose from over 70 farmers markets. Gotta run.
Not now. I'm training.
To build on that, we brought Jeff and Carrie back. We got a lot of positive feedback from the farmers markets on that ad, and so we wanted to build on what they were doing on camera. So this fall we did an ad promoting apple orchards, pumpkin patches, and other fun fall activities that tied back to farms in Minnesota. The one thing to keep an eye on this ad is just make a mental note of how much Jeff Grayson must eat during the filming of this commercial.
What is an Olympic athlete like Carrie Tolleson doing out on the farm?
Apples are great for my health, Jeff. Nothing beats the flavor of Minnesota-grown apples. And it's tons of fun. Come on.
There it is.
Find the world's greatest apples and fun at MinnesotaGrown.com.
So that's a little snapshot of the things that we're doing, the kinds of ways we're trying to promote the feel of buying local, that it's a fun activity. The proposal before you will result in three specific outcomes. First, we need to involve more producers and reach more
consumers. Representative Szymanski, do you have a question on those ads? Apples catch your attention or what?
Mr. Chairman, I think they did a very good job of providing information to the consumer on the fresh quality of Minnesota-grown apples and other produce. Thank you.
Coming from an apple grower, I'm sure you're aware of that. And I will tell you, Mr. Huguenin, so far, and you have won the prize so far for the best audio-visual here in the committee. So your colleagues up here have a lot of work ahead of them to try and outdo you. So we appreciate that. So
thank you, Mr.
Please proceed.
We need to reach more people outside the reach of the metro area. The ads you saw ran on metro television stations, and so we need to be able to do similar promotions outside the reach of those television stations. To do that, we'll partner with producers and other allies around the state to increase our advertising, promotions, and recruiting outside the metro. The second outcome, we need to expand our marketing campaign to benefit more types of producers, more types of farmers, and include new forms of targeted advertising. For example, we need more promotion of pick-your-own berry farms, livestock producers, and wineries, which have grown tremendously in this state. We also have opportunities to assist producers who market to restaurants, grocery stores, and other wholesale venues. And we must complement our television ads with targeted messages such as online ads that will deliver people directly into our website where they can find a producer near them. The third piece, our line of point-of-sale materials needs to be expanded and improved. This is one of the most important services that we offer to our producer members. In fact, we distribute over 1.1 million items every year that are imprinted with the Minnesota Grown logo. Retailers and producers alike are asking for customized items to promote produce, plants, and meats. I'd like to thank you very much for the opportunity to be here this morning to talk a little bit about the Minnesota Grown program and what we would like to do with your support. I ask for your support of the proposal that will help strengthen a program that's proven to be a wise investment of public funds and a valuable resource for Minnesota producers. I'd certainly be happy to answer questions, and we also have three of our members who are here today that would like the opportunity to testify as well.
Couple of questions, and we certainly will have your folks come down and testify. I do want to say to you and your folks that I do think Minnesota Grown probably is the best thing we have going to put a face on agriculture in the state. I mean, you talk about the ads in the Twin Cities area. I mean, they know that there's corn and soybeans out here and other things, but they don't get the Minnesota agriculture thing. But when they see a Minnesota Grown logo or a commercial or something else, I think there's a connection there with our farmers, whether they're part of the Minnesota Grown program or not. So I think it's absolutely an essential program. I am concerned as the chair of this committee and frankly as a member of this committee over many years that you don't have enough staff and resources within the department for all the things that we would expect you to be doing. And again, case in point, I appreciate your request here, and it's going to $136,000 per year, which is roughly, I suppose, two full-time equivalents. And I wonder if that's enough, besides putting out the magazines, the website, and the promotion things you do. Again, for example, and you've heard me probably talk about this, but I want to put it on the record. I think there's unlimited potential in our supermarkets for Minnesota-grown products. And do we have people that can call on Super Value or Colburn's or, all the other large Nolans and all these folks and see what we can do to get that Minnesota-grown label in there? And case in point, members, I think all of us, when we go to the grocery stores now, you see going up and down every aisle, you see little cards hanging out that'll say carbohydrate friendly or low fat or no sugar, and they're advertising spots on the shelves where these products are. I don't know why grocers won't want to advertise Minnesota grown and draw your attention to that honey that's sitting on the shelf that was grown 2 miles down the road, which a lot of our stores do carry. And I think, frankly, the time is ripe for things like that. I've seen stores being redone at this point in anticipation of Walmarts and other big boxes coming into towns. Our smaller stores, or even some of our chain stores, frankly, are looking for a way to compete with some of these folks. I don't know that Walmart will ever carry, and I'm just using them as an example, a Minnesota-grown product and advertise it, but I think the local folks in town, the smaller supermarkets and others, will do that and will promote it. And I guess I'm just concerned that we don't have enough resources for all. That's just one example of many, I think, for Minnesota-grown people. I'm of the opinion, too, that people will seek those products out, and they will pay more for them, you know. Another 10 or 20 cents a pound for Minnesota-grown pork products or, for honey or for apples or, as opposed to Washington apples, we'd rather buy Shemansky apples. If we knew they were there in the store and had the label on them that they were grown right here, in Silver Lake, just down the road, I think we'd gravitate towards them and pay Representative Shemansky a little more for that product. So, I know that you're here, frankly, trying to advocate for a budget that's put in place, but I do want to tell you, and not get you in a pickle, that I do think, to use a phrase, and we won't go into pickles either, that's another Minnesota-grown product that we had some fun with a few years ago. But I'm concerned, members, as we put this bill together, that we really think hard about this program and how we can expand. I mean, you're watching on the screen and you're seeing, I think, a lot of good examples of how we can promote this. And we may want to talk about whether they have enough resource or not for what they're doing. Any comments on that at all, or you're just listening and nodding and saying, you bet?
No, Mr. Chairman, there's a couple of specific things that I would like to comment on. I want to be clear about one thing in the budget. The proposal to go to $136,000 is program dollars. That's not staff.
Okay.
So I want the members to know that that's program dollars. There's roughly an equivalent of two FTEs that work with this program, myself and one other individual. Two other points. One that you mentioned about getting the items into grocery stores and grocery store shelves. And we absolutely believe that that's a possibility. And one of the major pieces of this initiative is to do more point-of-sale materials and specifically to work with retailers, be they Kowalski's, Lund's, whomever, and to customize things so that they, in effect, end up buying into the program because it's a custom piece that fits them and us. And just a side note on Walmart, they invited me out to tour their Tolma, Wisconsin distribution center a couple of years ago, and it was interesting to hear them. They used the phrase regionally appropriate foods, and they also, they're getting a strong feedback that consumers want to buy local products. And they've changed some of their corporate practices to allow them to do a little bit of labeling of where the product is from in the stores. Certainly nowhere near compared to Lund's or Biley's, but they are changing.
And one last question. Are we, I can't remember now, remind me, maybe Representative Chairman knows from her committee, but don't we have a Minnesota grown organic label, and are we working on other labels like that that will point to different types of production or quality? One time we talked about a Minnesota grown certified program that we could maybe put together for meats and other things, as some of the diseases worldwide were talked about, that we could put a quality label on some of these things that would stand out, you know, like a, you know, an Idaho potato or a Washington apple that we talk about. What does Minnesota grown mean, and are we putting some stamps on different products like that?
Mr. Chairman, that's an excellent question. To address the first part about the Minnesota grown organic, that is one of the other additional outcomes of this. Is we will develop a version of the Minnesota grown logo with a tagline that will have either organic or certified organic. We'll work with the Organic Advisory Task Force and other organic producers and see how they want that formatted. But one of the nice things about that is it will let Minnesota producers who are organic to have a single logo rather than ending up with a whole flurry of different seals on their label. They'll be able to differentiate themselves as organic and local. And it's interesting, some of the consumer research I'm seeing where people who've been real big proponents of organic, and now as you see multinational organic products come into the stores, a lot of those people are saying, wait a minute, that's not what we meant. We thought we were going to have local or at least regional organic. And so that's one of the drivers behind a version of Minnesota Grown that will also tie in the organic theme.
Last question. As I just mentioned, you hear about Washington apples, Idaho potatoes, Florida orange juice, Wisconsin cheese. Are we marketing the Minnesota Grown label at least, or are we thinking about marketing at least regionally outside of our borders? Is there any efforts on that so that people in Iowa recognize a Minnesota grown label on certain products that might show up in their state as a quality type of product?
Mr. Chairman and members, we are in fact doing that. Not across the board with every product, but one of the best examples of that is apples. We have a program where we partner with our apple growers who are moving into states like Missouri, Iowa, and other states, and we're helping them sample their product. With Minnesota apples, we all know what a Harrelson apple tastes like. But once you get outside of this state, most people don't. And even Honeycrisp is still known mainly in Minnesota. And so we're doing some cost sharing with producers to help them pay the cost of sampling in grocery stores outside of Minnesota. And they've told me that's been very helpful in helping them establish a beachhead and move Minnesota apples out of state.
Okay. Very good. Someone else has joined us. Wait a minute. Representative Welty has a question first.
Thank you, Chairman Junkin. To the testifier, I was just looking at your increasing consumer demand statistic there, and you said that nearly all 170,000 copies of the 2006 directory were distributed in just 5 months. Then it goes on to say, and the number of consumers using the online directory has increased dramatically. Well, increased dramatically can mean that you went from 10 to 20 or from 100 to 300 hits. I'm just wondering, can you give us some idea of, number one, the numbers on the hits for your online directory, and then also, since you've run the ads, from what you had to say, I'm assuming that these ads were fairly new and done over this past summer and fall. Do you have any feedback? Did you do any surveys at the farmers markets to find out if you were seeing new people come to the farmers markets because of those ads?
Mr. Hugan.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, yes, in fact, the ads that you saw are new from this past year. They were brand new. In terms of some of the feedback, the Minneapolis Farmers Market does do surveys of their consumers, their attendees, and so they have some statistics in terms of the percentage of people who said that they came because they had seen one of the television ads. So we do have some of those numbers. I can't quote a percentage today. I wouldn't want to misquote that. In terms of number of unique visitors to the website, and I want to be clear, when we report a figure, we're reporting unique visitors. So if you went to our site 25 times this month, you would count as one unique visitor. Oftentimes you'll hear people that use different language, but we try to be consistent and more realistic in terms of how many bodies are going to the site. We know that in the past year, people who went to MinnesotaGrown.com were in that 20,000 to 30,000 unique visitor range. We're increasing at an average clip of about 25% per year over the last 3 years. One of the things we can measure is our television partnership is with Fox 9 here in the metro area. And part of that includes ads or tile ads on their web, on their web page that link directly to us. So we can measure how many people are coming directly from their website. That number has also increased, and they're looking at adding some additional functionality to what they're doing to promote us online. And while I can't guarantee you which station personalities it will be, they have agreed to do a public service ad featuring station on-air talent to promote Minnesota Grown and the Minnesota Grown Directory this next year. So we're very excited about that. And within the next couple months, we'll know exactly which talent it is that we'll receive.
All right. Very good. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Bob Fitch. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association. MNLA represents over 1,500 members, including nursery and greenhouse growers, landscape professionals, garden centers, and others who grow, design, install, and maintain your outdoor living environment. Before I go into my prepared remarks, I would address your last question, Mr. Chairman. I'm the immediate past president of Minnesota Grown Promotion Group, one of two advisory committees that serves the Minnesota Grown program. And I was chairman for about 5 years. And I can tell you there are no harder working staff members than Brian and Paul at the Minnesota Grown program at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. They are down one staff person from when I started with the program about 10 years ago. It is unbelievable how much effort and how much success they have with two staff people. And my personal viewpoint would be that we would be well served by an additional two staff people. I mean, to be realistic, if we had two additional staff people in the program, to go along with the program, the extra program dollars that we're talking about here, it would be fantastic. So anyway, just responding to your
good
question.
We appreciate
there.
That.
MNLA members are family-owned businesses, the vast majority having 10 or fewer full-time employees. Obviously, most of these businesses are not going to have full-time marketing experts on staff. They rely on our association to help with marketing, and we in turn rely on our partnership with the Minnesota Grown Program. Minnesota Grown Program helps our nurseries, greenhouses, and garden centers market their locally grown trees, shrubs, perennials, annuals, and specialty plants. The Minnesota Grown logo helps us deliver the message to consumers that the landscape plants they buy from local companies are grown specifically for our tough northern climates. One of the great things about the Minnesota program is the ability to leverage the resources of all of the program partners. Every year, the Minnesota Department of Ag marketing staff negotiates an agreement with a major local television station. That negotiating expertise serves a number of us involved in the program, not just the nursery and greenhouse growers in our organization, but the apple growers, the Christmas tree growers, fruit and vegetable growers, and farmers markets. We each get to televise our individual messages at the right time of the year, but we pool our dollars through Minnesota Grown to get a volume discount on ad rates. This effort gives the little guys a chance to compete with the massive marketing done by the big box stores. We're even using the Minnesota Grown message within our own industry at the wholesale level. I had the page pass around just a sample of a recent ad that we've been doing. At the wholesale level, the strength of the Twin Cities landscaping market has drawn in out-of-state competitors, especially from Kansas, Missouri, and Oklahoma. Because of our cold winters, it costs more to produce and grow a plant here than it does in those states. And for better or for worse, some of our landscape contractor members are attracted to those less expensive plant materials. But because it takes longer to grow here, our plants are tougher, and they'll hold up it for the long haul. And so working with Minnesota Grown, we started a promotion, Our Plants Are Tougher Than Your Plants, that is aimed at local landscape contractors, reminding them that their local growers have the nursery stock that will stand up to 30 below, 40 below temperatures better than the trees grown south of here. The bottom line is that the Minnesota Grown Program has helped Minnesota-based nursery and greenhouse growers and garden centers. This small increase in state funding, and again, I would remind the members of the committee, first time there's been a request, first time, this would be the first increase in 20-year history of the program, and so the, I would just remind you of that. This small increase will make a real difference in our association's ability to help local companies market themselves in the face of outside competition. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Very good. Thank you. Next. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jim Birkholz. That's spelled B-I-R-K-H-O-L-Z. And I'm an apple grower in Chisago County near Taylor's Falls. And it's good to be here with another fellow apple grower, Representative Szymanski. For the last 3 years, I have represented the Minnesota Apple Growers Association on the Minnesota Grown Committee. And I should also mention that our family business in Chisago County, we grow apples. We grow pick-your-own strawberries, pumpkins, and squash. We're 90% direct market and about 10% wholesale. We supply local grocery stores. In my work with the Minnesota Apple Growers Association, as a grower member, we really have the perspective that this is really an important state and industry partnership that serves all size producers. And that's one of the things that's nice is whether you're a small direct market producer or a large wholesale grower or any mix in between, the Minnesota Grown Program offers a number of services that help our collective industry be successful. In Minnesota, there's about 150 commercial apple producers. About 80% of those, or about 20% of those growers produce about 80% of the crop. However, about 80% of our growers are involved in some form of direct marketing, as whether apples are sold directly off the farm or whether they're sold in the grocery stores. The Minnesota Grown point-of-sale materials, the grocery store ads, the type of ads that Mr. Huguenin shared with you today are an important part of our overall collective marketing effort. And we think enough of this kind of partnership that, as Mr. Huguenin mentioned, we do in fact put our own industry dollars into it and match up with the state. Situated as we are this far north, our production is not as high as in some of the major apple growing areas of the country. We need to have a commitment to marketing our product to keep our industry viable. Just in terms of size comparisons, Minnesota apple industry produces about 600,000 bushels of apples a year. Washington State, in an average year, can easily produce 100 million bushels. So we're very small in comparison to them. We are kind of in a big sea of apples, so to speak, but ours are unique varieties that are appreciated by the Minnesota consumer, and so we have viable apple businesses in Minnesota in large part because of marketing efforts like Minnesota Grown that help Minnesota consumers actually locate a Minnesota product and say that's unique. In fact, Minnesota grows the best Honeycrisp of anywhere in the country, and that's what we want. Let me just touch momentarily on strawberries. I'm also a fresh market strawberry grower. We have about 2.5 acres of pick-your-own strawberries. And let me tell you, on that beautiful June day when temperature is going to be 80 degrees and it's sunny and the strawberries are ripe, there's a little nervousness that sets in on the grower as you're waiting for the customers you depend on to pick your crop to arrive at the gate. And the radio and TV ads, the point-of-sale materials, and the website links are important, are increasingly important to our marketing efforts. Minnesota Grown is a large reason why we can get people out to the farm and participate in our businesses, so that's really important. Just a couple other quick notes. Minnesota Grown, as we look at members of this industry, we're also looking at what we do for society with our businesses. And just a reminder to the committee that Minnesota Grown is an important state investment in the health solution. Obviously, increasing the consumption of fruits and vegetables is an important part of overall health promotion, and that's something that the state has been involved in, and we hope that continues and increases. And then also, Minnesota Grown is a tremendous state investment in our energy solutions. There used to be a saying that we used a lot in Minnesota Grown, it's 2,000 miles fresher. Well, obviously, it's also 2,000 miles closer. And the apple industry in this country is looking at the fact that about 70% of our apples come from Washington State, and it's a long ways to truck those around the country. And so promoting a Minnesota grown business is also an important part of the energy solution in promoting people to consume food that's grown close to them. Thank you for your time, members of the committee, and we appreciate your support for this initiative.
Very good. Thanks for coming and visiting with us today. I think we have one more here. Yep. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Gary Paul, fifth generation vegetable grower from Apple Valley, Minnesota. And I want to thank you guys for the opportunity. This is kind of an exciting thing for a farmer to be sitting in the state capitol. But a few things on the... A few things I'd like to point out for the chair and fellow committee members. Last year, we shipped sweet corn as far north as Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, and as far south as Houston, Texas. And we're probably a little bit different niche than Jim, as far as we're mostly a wholesale operation. 50% of our crop stays probably within the Twin City area here with the Cubs and Rainbows and Barley's and Lund's, and our other 50% gets shipped out of state or outstate Minnesota to the Russ Davises of the world that service Super Ones, Colburn's, and Super Values. So I think a Minnesota product comes and goes quick. The season is short, and we rely on Minnesota Grown to get point-of-sale materials out to the outstate wholesalers and stores, and to allow the people to know that the Minnesota-grown product is there and available. Your question of do you think $136,000 is enough? Absolutely not, but I think the committee members on the Minnesota-grown are fiscally responsible, and I think we put our dollars where we feel are best appropriated. We do not, I mean, we're all independent small farmers, so to speak, so we care where our dollars go, and, you know, through the volunteer hours that is put together with this board, we help, say, Brian and Paul, which, and I agree with Bob, we could use at least one, if not two more full-time employees on that to help alleviate the workload that these two guys have. But and as far as Walmart is carrying Minnesota-grown products, we do sell to Walmarts and Sam's. And this is one area where I think Walmart and Sam's is making a concerted effort on trying to get regionally produce within their stores. However, I think if we had a better marketing campaign, I mean, I can only do so much as an independent grower. I think the Department of Ag could get involved and help promote Minnesota-grown products within the big box stores also. So, thank you.
Very good. We appreciate you coming in. And there's still farms in Apple Valley, huh?
Well, what a few.
Wow. And so your tax rates, I assume, are okay then. Property tax. They tax you as agriculture land out there?
Yes, they do. And Mayor Mary out there does a wonderful job for us. Right. And she's a true advocate of, say, farmers markets. And we have a small retail facility, too, that that is frequently vented by the council members and the mayor herself. So,
very good. Thank you. Any questions, members? If not, we thank you for your presentation, Minnesota Grown, and thank AURI for coming in today and the samples. And we will continue with the Department of Agriculture for the most part tomorrow. So with that, the meeting is adjourned.